It's not perfect news, but it is good news. April 20th, 1999. You remember? I do. Almost every second, I read all of the reports, all of the timelines. I even watched that horrible video of them. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, Little in Colorado, Columbine High School. 12 students, one teacher, 13 murdered. Do you know that Columbine is now the 13th deadliest shooting in U.S. modern history? 13th. San Bernardino, Sutherland Springs, Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech, Orlando, Las Vegas, Parkland, Florida. All together, all post-Columbine, four of the top 10 within the last 20 months. I remember being at my friend's house, watching the news in shock and disbelief. This can't be. This is a simulation. But it wasn't. It was real. Later, we saw the closed circuit feed. We watched Eric swing his rifle around in that hallway without a care, without remorse, as if he was twirling a baton at band practice. We then read the report that they asked that girl at gunpoint if she believed in God. We read that she confessed that she did. We then read that they shot her. It was too much. The world stopped. Time stopped. Never before were kids attacked in this kind of way. At least as I can remember. It felt like weeks or months before any of us returned to normalcy. Tom Brokaw brought his NBC News crew to our high school. Apparently, Westfield Senior High was a close demographic sibling to Columbine. He wanted to address the school, our class, and investigate if there were any underlying issues that we shared in common. How many classified themselves as loners? How prevalent was bullying? Were there any cliques, dark cliques, like the Trenchcoat Mafia? I remember sitting on the risers thinking for the first real time, I was no longer sure of the meaning of God's covenant or God's promise. But how could this be? How could this have happened under God's watch? Yes, I was aware of our world's darkest history, but I was a teenager, and at that time, Columbine was the most horrific thing I could ever imagine. It made no sense. There was no reason. There was no good reason. And it was on those risers that it first became clear to me that no, everything does not happen for a reason. For if it did, if God would ordain for kids to be slaughtered for some higher or latent purpose, then that God would be monstrous and dead to me. And so I came to believe that God is not the author of destruction. God is not the cause of our suffering. God takes no delight and earns no glory from our pain. Our story in Genesis is clear. God long ago hung up God's bow. God promises Noah to never again be the agent that destroys God's people. God covenants to never again destroy all flesh. It's good that the kids just left because it's a sad translation that most of our modern Bibles have it as rainbow. For the Hebrew, Peshet, all those ends, towards life, towards peace. We must yet come to terms with the kingdom being near, being already, but also not yet. God's covenant is not perfect, at least as we understand perfection. For God's covenant, at least here with Noah and at present with us, does not guarantee our protection. It does not guarantee our kids' protection. It does not guarantee our blessing. It does not guarantee our prosperity. God's love and favor does not remove us from our pain, from our shame, from our humiliation. For life will still happen. Nature and chaos and mutations will still have their way. And sometimes lives will just sum up to be nothing more than collateral damage. And it isn't right. It isn't fair. Take Noah, for instance. Noah just survived a cataclysmic event. He did the unthinkable and saved all flesh from certain and complete annihilation. And though he received God's covenant, just verses later, Noah is found out by his sons to be the world's first naked drunkard. Perhaps justified by the ordeal he just went through, Noah, in the verses that follow our text, drinks a little bit too much wine and finds himself naked in the wind. Talk about humiliation and shame. But worse, due to some strange law, one of Noah's sons, who just received the covenant, Canaan, after seeing his father lying there naked, he goes to rush to him and to clothe him. He somehow breaks a custom, and because of that, the entire lineage will be cursed. God's covenant does not come with a guarantee no longer warranty. For brother will rise against brother. Birthrights will be stolen. Plagues and famines will seize the land, and even the blameless will lose all. Temples will be destroyed. Yes, temples will be rebuilt, and temples will be destroyed again. There will be exiles, laments, the desolating sacrilege, persecution, imprisonments, the Holocaust. God's covenant is not protection. It is not perfection. It is not prosperity. Even God's own son will be baptized only to immediately be thrown out into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. And in that wilderness, Satan will tempt him. Wild beasts will surround him. He will emerge to find his mentor arrested. And later, his own disciples will not understand him. One will even choose to betray him. The people will choose to free another instead of him. And he will suffer. He will die on a cross. In Mark's gospel, at least, none of his disciples will stick around to see him resurrect to life. God's covenant does not even render the best of us safe. We can go from dropping off our kids at school and turning on the TV in the corner just hours later. We can go from feeling happy in our marriage to learning that our spouse has been unfaithful. We can go from being healthy and energetic and full of life to crumbling to our knees in a doctor's office and a diagnosis. There is and will be hunger. There is and will be homelessness. There is and will be abuse, drugs, alcohol, violence, depression, loneliness, alienation, and none of it I see is for a greater reason. All of it seems cruel, chaotic, and unfair. And friends, you don't need me to tell you any of this, for we all know it. We all know it. The wilderness is all too real. We are were surrounded by a great many wild beasts with many faces, with many names. And sad for us to say, there's no cure-all remedy that can, at least at present, fully redeem the fallen state of our timeline. So what then is the purpose of God's covenant? If it's not the blessing of safety or prosperity, what is it? I have come to believe that God's covenant is the promise of presence, the promise of a relationship, the promise of love and hope. I know it's not perfect news, but it is good news. For God's bow is up in the sky, and God's tears are down on the ground. God is there with us in the wilderness, grieving, comforting, even healing, though maybe short of curing. After all, God knows this wilderness. God is from the wilderness. The wilderness is God's original home. Several texts in our scripture imply that the Lord is uniquely in and originates from the wilderness south of Palestine. The Lord first appears to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, and there reveals in the wilderness God's divine name. The prophets paved the way for the Lord in the wilderness, and is there in that wilderness setting that the Son of God is baptized, tempted, and then begins his ministry. God is not in the Son of the beasts, but our friend amongst them. As God's own Son wept at the death of his friend Lazarus, God too weeps for us, weeps for those families. God weeps for what is happening to this nation. God weeps for what has come of God's creation. For while there is admittedly so much beauty, there is way too much ugly. Candidly, I'm sometimes comforted by a wild idea. It's a fantastic notion that's probably heretical. That we were not the first creation, not the last, or even the ideal. But in the grand experiment of perfecting creation throughout the cosmos, perhaps Earth was an initial trial run. Maybe that's why it took 4 billion years for humanity to sprout up. Maybe God just hadn't gotten the chemistry right. Too much elapsed time, too much free will, too many freedoms in God's equations for nature and the formulas of evolution yielding too many mutations in both body and spirit. And so perhaps like the accomplished inventor who yet cherishes her very first invention as a child, who keeps that very first invention in reach of her off the shelf even as it collects dust. Perhaps Earth and the solar system is in the same vicinity to God, somewhere on the cosmic shelf in near reach. It might not do anything for you, but honestly, it arrests my wonder and comforts me in a strange kind of way. For at the very least, it helps explain why evil has continued to run its course, leaving another 17 dead, 16 children, under the watch of a benevolent God. So even if it is far-fetched and completely heretical, still in this hypothetical scenario, God cares, God weeps, God waits, and my friends, God hopes that somehow, miraculously, that first creation not just God is to keep with us, but it is also ours to keep with God. The covenant is a two-way promise, a relationship, a real relationship between willing partners who have a say and a stake. I know it's not perfect news, but it is astonishingly good news that we have a way in. We have been invited into partnership with the divine. And so we have a role to play. We need to be co-agents in this creation, witnessing to and proclaiming through our words and our actions that the kingdom is indeed at hand, not some distant fairy tale, but a reality that we all must come to experience, especially our children. And so we need to take action where God can't. We need to take action where our cowardly and compromised lawmakers won't. For we can no longer skate by on mere thoughts and prayers and condolences. For thoughts and prayers and condolences are good enough maybe for these pews, but they are hugely and bigly impotent out there. So let us instead, please, my God, do something. Actually, really do something. Let it not just be a memorial garden of 17 white flags or the hundreds of colored t-shirts on our front lawn, but let us act. Let us form and become the spark of a systemic change. But we can't just let this be another moment that comes and goes where we shrug our shoulders, furrow our brows, but then go back to our meals and our social feeds. If we do that, that's willful blindness. That's willful indifference. That's not living by the covenant. That's not seeing things as they truly are and how they ought to immediately be. No, that's choosing to stay in the wilderness. But now at the end, you might be asking, that's all very pretty. What really can we do? Seriously, what can we do? What can we actually accomplish when already so many of our efforts have led to naught? When so much of the power to change policy and society is not even in our hands? It's simple. Start small. Start early. And do it daily. I told a confirmation class last year that the easiest and perhaps most powerful thing that you can do as a modern believer is to befriend the friendless, the loner, the geek. Show them through kindness, through nearness and compassion, that they too are a child of God and equally deserving of grace. My friends, do you know anyone right now who's on the fringes? Do you know of anyone feeling alone, isolated, and alienated, on the outside looking in? My friends, today, reach out to them. Welcome them. Invite them. Show them God's amazing grace as you yourself know it. For I truly believe one of the most overlooked aspects and suspects in all of these tragedies that we've been through is the darkness of alienation that one must have come to feel from such an early age. If we could just reach them before the tipping point, before they are made to believe that they are destined only for the wilderness, then just maybe we can incite and inspire a real change, maybe not tomorrow, but hopefully in our nearest futures. It's not complex, I know it's wishy-washy, I know it's simple, I know it's not